over the mic.
This is Shelly H., and I'm a bulimic and compulsive eater in recovery, and I want to welcome you to our workshop in Finding God in Your Life. And we have three speakers, and the speakers are in order. I'm going to start with our first speaker, who is Eric. Eric R. is from Area 5 from Plantation, Florida. He's been in the room since 12602 and has 102-pound release. He has a recommitted abstinence of 12307, and he's a full-service sponsor and always available. And I quote, this is Eric, "This program of recovery not only saved my life, it gave me my life. I never had a life loving myself. I now have a life loving myself, and forgiving others. Recovery is first and foremost in my life, and doing it, this is the only way I know. The C.A. Howe way of living and loving." Welcome, Eric.
Thank you. I'm an old pro at doing this. I've done a few of these workshops, and I never feel more centered or focused when I'm doing service. And that's all part of God and God's message to me that I learned 8.5 years ago when I walked in these rooms. I can tell you just real quickly, when I walked into these rooms, I came in for the diet. I came in to lose weight. I have a medical history that I was very fearful of losing my leg. I'm a walking miracle. 24 years ago, I was supposed to die from bone cancer, and I've lived through it all. I've walked my daughter down the aisle, danced with her at a wedding. I have two beautiful grandchildren. One's only 5 weeks old, and I'm a very blessed man. We're talking about making room for God, the joys of step four and step five. Step four is the inventory. Step five is giving away the inventory. I had worked with a lot of people that were in 12-step rooms, and I thought I knew what 12 steps were, and I had absolutely no idea until I walked into these rooms and walked through the doors and started working the program. When I came in, I was the most abusive, self-centered, hateful person who was a know-it-all, knew everything that there was, and just thought that God had abandoned me. I doubted that the existence of God was even there, and I had a very big turnaround. Through working the steps and working this program, I was blessed with recovery, and more so I was blessed with an instant connection. Well, about 3 months into the program, I was blessed with a connection with God personally. I was on the verge. I was just recounting this story this morning to somebody. I was blessed with I was pink clouding. I was more than pink clouding. I was beyond pink clouding. I was neon pink. I was espousing this. I had found the solution to all the weight problems of the world, and I was out there trying to tell everybody, come in, this is it, this is the solution. And I really didn't know what I was talking about. I was just so joyful that where I was. And I became suicidal. I literally almost had a nervous breakdown. I was on the point of a nervous breakdown. And I remember driving on the interstate, and my life was in shambles. I had no job that was meaningful. I felt like a total failure to my wife and my daughter. My life was just totally a wreck. And I just felt that I had let my whole family down, and I couldn't face anybody anymore. And I picked out the concrete abutment that I wanted to drive into to kill myself. And at the last minute, because I had counseled other people who would, and I'd never gone through clinical depression or any sort of therapy or anything else. It was just me. And I had that thought, a statement that I had always said to other people, that this is a permanent solution to a temporary problem, killing myself. It was, there was a solution to this problem. I just had to find it. So I kept going, and I connected with God. I'm not going to bore you with the whole story, but I connected with God. God spoke to me on the beach as I was about ready to throw myself into the ocean. I got my friend Gwen in the back, who's heard my story when she was in Florida, and it's a long story, so I'm not going to go. But I will tell you that that is what saved me, and it was saved because I came into the program and I surrendered to the program, step by step by step by step. I did step one, I did step two, I did step three, I did all the writings, I was doing service as soon as I could. To me, the ability to do service is my badge of honor. It's something that I work hard to get. It's something that I work hard to maintain, because the only way that I can keep any abstinence and any recovery in my life is by constantly doing service. All you have to do is start to ask me the question, and I'm going to say yes. If it has anything, and I even feel that it's related to service, I'm going to say yes, because that's just the way I am. You could say I'm a service addict, but I'm not. I just love doing the service because I feel that's where the recovery is. Going into doing the fourth step inventory, after I became a sponsor and I had the blue book in front of me and I started writing looking at the questions, I said, wow, these are some heavy questions. And I can tell you to the depth of my soul that doing that inventory is what really brought me into the recovery and what really gave me the basis of everything that I've done over the last 8.5 years. I did another inventory afterwards, but that was the one. And I sat down, and some of the questions were not germane. They didn't pertain to me. They didn't have anything to do with me or my experiences in life. But it started when I released my will, and I just sat down and put pencil to paper and just started writing wherever the question was, whether I understood it or whether I knew what they were trying to get at, because in actuality, there are no correct answers. The answer is what you get out of the question and what you put pen to paper. It's all thought-provoking, and it's all a matter of bringing up those deep-seated disturbances to me, the deep-seated emotional disturbances that I carried all my life. I was 55 years old before I ever came into this program. I was the most successful dieter that ever walked the face of the earth. I was also the most successful relapser that there was, because I would gain back everything that I lost plus interest. I called it return on investment, and I always got great returns on my investment. The ability to sit and uncover my soul through that inventory was, to me, the most cathartic experience I ever had. There's a lot of people that I work with that are afraid to do the inventories. They're fearful of it. They can't face the pain. I faced every pain that there was, and I did it joyfully. I went through it very quickly. I didn't procrastinate. One of the few times in my life I didn't procrastinate, because I wanted to get through it, and I wanted to keep going on. My desire was to get through the steps. I wanted to absorb as much as I could. I was that passionate about the program. In working the inventory and going through all of these things, all of these so many deep-seated thoughts that I had buried way in my past came to the forefront. As a for instance, when I was a young boy, I was 10 years old, 8, 10, 12 years old, I always thought my father neglected me and my father didn't pay enough attention to me. My father had a gas station business, and he got me very interested in talking about his youthful experiences in the Boy Scouts. And I was in the Boy Scouts, and we would go on camping weekends or something, and I could never get my father to join in, and I always felt resentful of that. I always felt my father was just ignoring me, that I wasn't important enough to him. And I carried that baggage around unknowingly through most of my life. And I knew my father. I had a very close relationship with my father. He was my best friend, as was my mother. My parents were my two best friends. But I had these deep-seated opinions and formations in my mind that made me the person that I was up until I came into the program and started looking at who I was and why I was the way I was. And that's the beauty of the inventory to me, is that it opened up my mind, and I came to realize that the perceptions I had were childish perceptions. I was 8, 10, 12 years old. My father didn't love me. My father was killing himself in a business that he had no right to be in. He was not a businessman. He was a fantastic salesman. He was a fantastic people person, but he didn't know how to run a business because he was too good of a guy. He was what we call in my world a schmuck. And he just took everybody's sad story and bought it and wound up going into financial ruin because he let everybody take advantage of him. And in doing that, he was working 7 days a week, 10, 12-hour days. He just never had time to go away and do the things that I wanted to do. He wasn't ignoring me. He just was doing what he could to keep our family afloat. But I didn't know that as a child. When I started doing the questions, all of a sudden these thoughts started coming back to me, and I started reflecting back on that time in my life. And that's only one of many, many things. It was a release of a resentment that had built up over 40-some-odd years. Things about my mother, things about my youth, things about people who ridiculed me and called me the most vile names when I was a child and made me feel less than dirt. I walked around, you know, I was always the one making the jokes and the practical joker, and I did everything to make you want to love me because I wanted your affection and your attention so much. I was willing to do anything, to go to any lengths to get that love and that attention for people to say something to me. Doing the inventory step by step by step was that release. That was the cathartic exercise that I did without fear. I've done this whole program without fear. There's things that I thought I knew, and I said to myself long after I, right after I had this connection with God, I will tell you that when I was on that beach in Hollywood and I was ready to throw myself in the ocean, crying hysterically, talking to my father in heaven, talking to my uncle, just asking God for help because I knew I was ready to kill myself. I was ready to end my life. I just couldn't face my family or anything else. And I heard the voice that said to me, just keep doing what you're doing and you'll be okay. And I thought it was a joke. I thought somebody was standing behind me and throwing, you know, it was a ventriloquist or something. And it was God. It was God speaking to me. I was blessed in hearing that. Not many people have had the same sort of experience that I have. But I was blessed. And I just took that to heart. And I went back and I revisited the inventory as I was doing it. And kept going over certain questions and looking at things. And I'll tell you, it's 8.5 years since I did that inventory. And today I still have flashbacks to the early part of my life and things that I did in my life and how I reacted to them versus what the reality was today. Because today I look at it as a mature man who's experienced all these things and understands what I did then, but couldn't deal with it then because I didn't know how to deal with it. This program has taught me how to do that. This program has taught me how to face life as it is, not as the way I think it is or the way I think it should be, but as the way that it is. And when I face the truth about myself and I face the pain about myself, I find great joy because I can move forward and I can improve. I can become a better person, and I have. I don't do it perfectly. I far from do this program perfectly. I have many slips. I have many emotional slips. And it's what I live for every day, to live in joy of God's will for me. That's what I ask myself. Is this what God wants me to do? Is this what I need to be doing? I know right from wrong, but there's many times that my mind and my will center and say, this is what you should do because this is what you want. Well, what I want is not necessarily what I need. There's a quote in the Big Book. I hold a Big Book meeting in South Florida that says, this is a program for people who want it, not for people who need it. And it's a very, 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 very upfront, in-your-face statement about what recovery is. It's a program for people who want it, not for people who need it. Everybody needs it. I can look at everybody and see, we all need it. But not everybody is willing to work for it. And you have to want it and have to work for it. So doing your inventory and doing it truthfully and not procrastinating and saying it's too painful, I don't want to do that. Just do it. Get down, cry through it, get the pain out of the way, do it, and then have the blessing of giving it to God and to somebody else. Doesn't matter who you give it to. I gave it to somebody that I trusted. I sat, I laughed, I cried, I was an emotional wreck while I was doing it. I was nervous as hell because I was giving somebody my innermost thoughts, my innermost experiences. I was trusting that this person was not going to divulge the thoughts that were in my mind that I never admitted to another human being in my life. It was the first time I admitted it to myself. My sexuality, my questioning, my life, where I was, what was I worthy of? Was I a good father? Was I a good son? Was I good everything? And I gave that to that person. And when I got done with it, it was like the anchor of the world, the anvil that had been on my shoulders and on my head was lifted. So if any message that I can give you, you know, this program was put together by our co-founders. I don't know who, I don't know if Fred was the one that actually put the inventory together. I'm going to make an assumption it was, but whoever it was, they came up with a program that works. Many, many people have gone before me, and many, many people have found resolution to all of this pain and this and all of the problems in their lives. I know I did, and I did it because I just plowed into it and just kept going ahead and ahead. And if I didn't know a question, I wrote the best that I could on it, and I said, you know what, I can always revisit this later, but I'm not going to stop, you know, doing what I'm doing. I'm going to keep going from one step to the next, to the next, to the next. And slowly but surely, some of the questions were repetitive, and I was able to pull all of that, you know, all of that garbage out of my life and look at it in reality and face it. Once I can face it, as the first step says, I admitted to myself that my life was unmanageable. Well, my life was unmanageable not only because of food. My life was unmanageable because I was an emotional wreck. I was a spiritual wreck. I had no spirit. I had no... My emotions were whatever was going to make me happy, you know, in my life. I've done every bad thing in my life that I possibly could. I cheated on my wife. I cheated on my children, my child. I cheated in my jobs. I stole. I did all sorts of things. And God protected me through all of this. I never went to jail. I'm still alive, medically alive, physically alive, emotionally alive. And that inventory gave me that basis of going further and further and further. Because once I did step four and gave it away, it now opened the door to step six. It's a magical formula. It works. There's no doubt about it in my mind. Nobody could convince me otherwise. I've seen too many people who have gone and followed that formula. And that's the joy of giving your life over to God and depending on that higher power. You don't have to call it God. I had a sponsor who had their dog as their higher power because they didn't believe in an entity called God. Allah, Buddha, your dog, whatever it is. Something outside of yourself that you can lean on and say, I need help. What do I do? Somebody that you can trust. And that's what I did, and that's what's worked for me. I only wish for you what I wish for myself and what I accomplished in doing the inventory and giving it away is peace of mind and an opening of my mind to accepting this program as it's written, the way it was written from day one, the way it continues to be practiced all along. And I know I need to do it better every day because I never do it perfect. I never will. So every day I strive to do it as best I can, as with most amount of energy, service, giving of myself to anybody that wants me. I'm always there and I'm always available. No matter what, I will always be available for this program. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Eric. The next speaker will be Roxanne. And Roxanne is from a native California. She's from Whittier, right? Okay, she lives in Whittier now. Excuse me. She's in CAO since 2004. She's a full-service sponsor, maintaining 90 pounds. And she holds many service positions. And she says she is a work in progress. And she's also happy, joyous, and free for me. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Roxanne, a compulsive eater in recovery. Hi, all. And, you know, I have a picture. I carry these pictures always, and I carry them for two reasons. One, because it's really all about me, and I'm an extremely selfish human being. And so when I'm starting to flip out and have one of those crazy days or questioning my existence or purpose or whatever, for some reason I'll look in my purse and then I'll go, oh, yeah, right. Okay, you don't want this. You don't want this. And then, you know, for those moments of outreach, so and anything that I could do to help others. Well, I have a little saying, and when Anne spoke with me about coming here and talking about the fourth and fifth step, you know, I'm that rebel, so then I go, well, fourth and fifth step, but I would have reworded it to also saying the tenth step, but I say that because that's what got me through the fourth and fifth steps, was the idea that it wasn't like the final thing. It was that inventory. It was where I was that moment when I answered the questions. It was that share. But, oh my, I'm not done. And so every day I have to go, oh God, what was my part in that? Or every day I have to go, wow, I'm mad. I was a car made me angry on the way here. You know, a guy in a car cut me off. And now I have to go, oh, wait, okay. Because, you know, right away the little New York's like, oh, what? And so it's like, wait. Oh, yeah, you know, I hope you have a really great day. I'm glad we didn't crash. Thank you, God. And so then I get to move on and not be angry and not be resentful and not stop at different places for fast food on my way home. So that's my thing. I had read something and it said this: to feel extraordinarily small and unimportant is always a wholesome feeling, and today I will enjoy being too small to carry the whole world on my shoulders. And I got to that through inventory, too, because it's really cool, because remember I already told you the world's all about me. And so if I'm too small, that means I can sit in that chair. That means I can go shopping and buy anything, and I can fit places physically, but I also then am not responsible for everything. And that was how I lived pre-inventory. Somehow, the room, you know, if it was a little cold, I could fix that. If there was some problem in your life, I could tell you what to do, and I could fix that. And so I was somehow running around trying to manage and micromanage lives of many people and losing sight of it and getting to 236 pounds, which isn't pretty. And on top of that, you know, yelling at my kids, throwing chairs, you know, tantruming. And I think you'll hear themes, because one of the really cool things I think about the C.A. Howe way of inventory is it helps us walk through younger ages, and we actually get to grow up. So as I'm working with sponsees, they're like, oh, you mean you're an adult? Oh my gosh, how cool is that? And so we get to very concretely grow up. And I was one of those born compulsive eaters, always had issues, always looked at God as if I plead enough, if I didn't think of the bad thing, then it wouldn't happen. All these little magical ways of looking at the world. And I was raised with a couple of different religions that were very different from each other, and so that was, you know, I was just kind of not connected. And I was in lots of weight loss programs and things when I was younger, you know, the whole Weight Watchers, and you get to goal weight, and then the next week I gained 8 pounds and thought, oh, well, because I had no concept of maintaining anything. And I was in OA when I was a teenager, actually, I was introduced to OA many, many years ago. So when we talk about relapse, I laugh because I had like a 15-year relapse of not even having anything to do. I was too busy for you people. I had way too much to do. I had to raise children. I had to work myself to death. I had to try and manage the world. So I definitely didn't have time for introspection. I had done an inventory a million years ago when I was in my early 20s in OA. And what I at that time realized was I was so afraid of not being perfect that I could only think, okay, who am I going to give it to? Okay, to this person. So all of my answers, and it was a different format, it wasn't the question one, it was where you just kind of look at character defects, was what would they think? How would they want to hear it? What will make them think I'm smart, articulate, good? Not anything about what really was going on in Roxanne's mind or what was really going on with me. And so I think for me in that time, it was just that whole concept of honesty was way out of my realm of possibility. And so for me, I had to have many things happen, lots of weight gain, lots of personal problems, professional issues, and ultimately an accident, that actual physical accident that brought me to, which I referred to you guys at that time as that eating thing, which I knew a friend had moved from OA to see how, and it was like, are you still in that eating thing? And she said, yeah, and I went to a meeting and sat in a plastic chair. It was a downy Friday morning, and went, oh my, and just cried and cried. And a woman that day introduced herself. I didn't kind of hear it. The next weekend I went back, after stopping at many fast food places that week, introduced herself as a compulsive eater and a sugar addict. And I remember thinking, oh my, because that was totally me. And I thought, is there a possibility? Perhaps this could happen. Perhaps my life could be better. Perhaps this could work. And so I just kind of, you know, stumbled up to her and said, would you be my sponsor? And she walked me through the first 30 questions and into the rest of our inventory with so much love and support. And that's what I try to do. So I'm thinking about like how we do fourth and fifth steps. So my real only rule is it can't be a one-word answer. Because you know how some of them are, like, you know, kind of weird questions, but so you can just go, no, yes. And I'm like, ah, let's dig a little deeper. So let's get at least a sentence. And so that's my rule. Oh, and I have the two pictures to show. They're like 10 years apart, so that I was fat for a long time, and longer than that. Thank you. And so I walked through that, and again, trying to grow up and thinking, wow, she didn't know me. She had her own life, and maybe, since she was basically a stranger, because I just met her at the meeting, I could dare to be honest, that I could dare to say some things that I really thought, I really felt, and I didn't have bolts of lightning, I didn't have some of the discoveries that people had. I just had an opportunity to say, you know what, I really did do that, and for me it disclosed really all the immaturity and all of the just wanting people to do what I wanted them to do as opposed to any kind of semblance of what was real. And I get to, again, do that on a daily basis. There's a couple of things. You know, I love, because it's all about me, I loved thinking about talking today because then it brought me back to reading some things because, you know, I'm on tradition questions. And so I read steps 4 and 5 in the 12 and 12, and then I read them in the big book again and thought, wow, you know, it's a real trip. A lot of you might know the big book, like totally back and forward, but step 4 is in one part, but step 5 is where it starts the chapter of into action. Isn't that awesome? And it's like, wow. So I looked at myself. I wrote down honest questions or honest answers to things. And then I had to share it with someone. And there's some really cute things. Like in the 12 and 12 on page 47, it says, if we are seriously disturbed, which I was and am, our first need was to quiet the disturbance, regardless of who or what caused it. And that, for me, came through in the inventory. Because I was so fearful of everything. I was this major overreactor. That would be the story. Oh, you're so Roxanne, you're so smart, Roxanne, or you have such a pretty face. Why do you overreact to everything? And it talks about on that same page how we are actors and how we'll for some people, show this face of great courage and fun and whatever. And then inside we're like, oh, God, did I do it right? Or, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. And it was like, oh, that is how I led my life. And through just marching on, and, you know, I loved when Eric mentioned that, through that idea of marching on and just saying, I'm not going to stop at a step because I'm not going to be done anyway. I mean, when we hear people that have been in the program for 20, 30, 40 years and I'm still learning, I'm like, wow, I have a whole lot of room to learn. And so that idea of continuing and going, okay, I did do that, they're like little markers, they're little growth steps that we completed and are moving towards because, again, my savior is step 10, which says, even if I wasn't completely honest or didn't know that I wasn't completely honest in step 4 earlier on in my inventory, I'll have another chance. And my sponsor always says, you know, we get it when we get it. We get it when we get it. And so sometimes I'll go, I just figured out. Like, we went to New York and I'm from New York and there's, you know, all these people and all of a sudden it flashed on me that something about my mom and how my aunt and how my cousin was, and I just thought, oh, I should have figured that out, you know, 45 years ago. But it's like, you know, we get it when we get it. And that's something else that came to me from going through the steps. In the sharing, when you say something, it's amazing. You know, you'll write it and you'll think you did the best, and then you're saying it, and as you're saying it, you're like, wow, did I really think that? Because it kind of comes full circle, you know, on a neurology level, you know, they always say, like, reading out loud and you hear it a different way. Well, wow, when you're talking to someone, you do hear yourself again, and then you get to problem solve it and to bring it through a little bit more. I love this program. It has totally saved my life. The program is the most important thing to me in my life. I even went back east and went to a meeting, just one of those meetings, you know, there was a meeting, and I walked into the meeting, and my husband says to me, I'm a 60% better person now, which, you know, you could take it the other way. I choose to usually go, yeah, I'm a better person. But I was starting to get antsy, get nervous, get hungry when we were back east, and so I looked at meetings, and I just walked into a meeting, and I tell you, you are my people. I walked in, someone said hi, I said, hey, I'm from California, and immediately my breathing was different. Immediately I was home and at peace. And so my prayer and wish for you is that you continue on this road, because we can be happy, joyous, and free together. And the relationship that we get with God as we march through these steps is absolutely unbelievable and amazing. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Roxanne. Okay. Now we have, thank you, Roxanne, we have Jan D. from Arizona. And she's a grandma who finally gets it. And she has over 6 years of abstinence and finally made room for God. And she would like to share her experience, strength at home, around clearing the wreckage of her past. Please welcome Jan.
Hi, can we please say the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you. I've never heard my voice before. I've done a lot of teaching in front of a class, but never with a microphone, so this is new and exciting. I'm Jan. I'm a compulsive eater in recovery through the grace of God. I was blessed when I first found this program to God granted me freedom from craving. And so abstinence for me has been continuous. And like I said, that's through the grace of God, though. But I don't know if you've ever heard the saying, some people have 20 years of experience. Some people have 1 year's experience 20 times. And sometimes I feel that way. I came into program 6 years and 14 days ago. I came in to lose weight, but I had already been losing weight and then regaining it on a diet. But I had sold given away all my clothes, and so I didn't want to buy another wardrobe. I found another way to lose weight, and I found a friend who I worked with who hadn't gained her weight back, so she brought me to a meeting. And it was okay. You know, I was a little antsy because I had heard of this organization called OA, and I'm like, I'm not going there, because all they do is talk about God. I was raised in a church. I believed there was a God, but only on my terms. You can't cram it down my throat. There's no way that I'm going to pray out loud, because I just don't. I don't want people to hear me, especially God, because I don't know. I went into churches and I felt like a hypocrite. And so I was like, this just isn't for me, really. But I went anyhow, because it seemed like, then I heard about weighing and measuring, and I'm like, I had enough of that in Weight Watchers. I am never weighing and measuring again. But I was abstinent 2 days after that first meeting. And for somehow, it worked, and it's working today. But to reiterate what Roxanne said, I am also a work in progress, and it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work for me. It's a lot of work for God, more for Him, because I just give it all to Him. But today, even today I am happy, joyous, and free. And where this all comes from today, I'm a slow learner. I started this with the friend who brought me to my first meeting with my first sponsor. And she was even more meek and mild than I and put no demands on me. She gave me the books and said, this is what you do. Okay, so I started, and it took me 2 months to do the first 30-day questions. The ultimate procrastinator. Okay, then I got stepped up, and I was like, okay, I said all the words. Yeah, now I can sponsor, and I had no idea what I was doing. But I tried anyhow. And then it was time to start my inventory. So she said, okay, answer all the questions, and when you're done, give them to me. Okay. So I wrote them all in a nice little notebook, and that took me about, at least 6 months. And I handed them to her, and she says, okay, I'll read them, and then what do you want me to do with them? And I thought you were supposed to burn them, so I burned them. And that was the end of that. I gave them to her. That was step five. And it was, you know, no reflection on her. We tend to sponsor the way we were sponsored. And apparently that's how she was sponsored. So then I started, unfortunately she wasn't able to be my sponsor anymore, and I had difficulty finding another one. Maybe I just didn't try hard enough, I don't know. But I remained, I wrote my food down, I found somebody to commit it to every day, but I didn't really have a formal sponsor. But she said, go ahead and start the steps. So I started writing on the steps, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I got up to step 8, step 9, and I was like, I really can't identify much in the way of character defects, and I just don't know who to make amends to. Okay, well, I did finally find God sent me a wonderful, wonderful step sponsor. I've never met the woman. We've exchanged photographs, and we talk on the phone once a week, and I email her every day. But going to a face-to-face meeting with her is a little difficult across the Atlantic. She is Dutch, and she lives in Holland, and she is a gift from God. But she said, I started giving, reading my step questions, and I told her about my reservations, about not knowing, who I need to make amends to, and she said, how did you do your inventory? Okay. So I told her, and she said, no, that will never do. And so she got me started on the right foot. She said, okay, this week I want you to write the first 3 questions, and when we talk on Sunday, you will read them to me. Oh, okay. And I procrastinated through my second inventory. But wow, what a difference. Once I started working on it and actually got into some stuff, I realized when I did my first inventory, this is like 2 years into program, and I'm redoing my inventory. But I realized I was not capable of the kind of honesty that is required. I was not capable of looking inside. And I was willing, but I didn't know how to do it. I had, as I go through it, I thought, yeah, I had some abuse issues, and I stole some money because I wanted to eat, and food was my escape and all that. But I didn't really look at it. I had a pretty traumatic childhood. My mom died when I was 9. And my dad remarried, bless her heart, she was 24, he was 37 and had 3 young kids, well, preteens. And she was clueless. And then she started having kids, and then she started developing severe debilitating PMS. And then the fun began, and it went on for 10 years. I found my comfort in food, and I did everything I could to have food. I stole. I stole food. I stole money. I borrowed money and never paid it back. I borrowed with no intention of paying it back. But And this went on for years and years and years. Well, I stopped stealing once I started earning money. I didn't need to steal it. I had it. But I spent a lot of my income on taking care of this part of my addictions. So I finally moved away from home, and that was like I could put all this behind me. What was amazing is I didn't miss my family when I left home, and I didn't go to the next town or the next state. I went to the Southern Hemisphere and lived there for 3 years, and I did not miss my family. And I thought, that sounds strange, but that was just my past. So, you know, back to doing the inventory, I started doing the questions and working through them. And some of the things that came out were things like everybody loved my dad. Everybody loved my dad. And it was through doing the inventory that I realized I didn't love my dad the way everybody did. He was a good man. Yeah, I liked him because he was my dad. He didn't need me, and I didn't need him. You know, he was always kind to me. I resented a lot of when I was growing up because my stepmother was abusing us, and he didn't do a thing about it. But I've kind of, you know, that's the kind of thing that I'm learning to deal with. And as I go along, you know, this is like three years later when I finally finished that inventory and got all my steps done, that I'm now really, really able to find some willingness to be honest. I'm just finding myself more capable. I grow in the program. Every day I grow. I had a little, you know, sometimes I feel like that little child that I need to punish myself because I did something bad, because that's what I was supposed to do. I was not allowed to express anger, but now I found out how to do that, and I feel, you know, I'm more healthy now, physically. I didn't pass my pictures around. As you can see, I have to be a little healthier. but I am. I've found that you know, I've given you two ways you can do the inventory, and I'm sure that there's still things that come up that I did in my inventory that occur to me. Oh, that's what that was, and then I remember more things, and I work on those specific areas. I work on one area at a time. I'm addicted to my daughter. I have three kids, but this one, I'm getting better. You know, it's another recovery issue. I mean, my daughter is 35 years old, and I'm still buying her groceries. Hello. She lives in California. I live in Arizona. Mom, I need somebody to babysit. Oh, okay. Well, fortunately, my husband and I have reached a new level of our relationship after 37 years of marriage, where he can actually talk to me, and I listen. He says, you don't really want to do that, do you? And I'm like, no, dear, I don't, and I'm not. So he has become my buddy. When I first started program, I wasn't going to tell him about this meeting every Thursday night because I thought, you know, he's just going to put me down. He's always the pessimist. And he has become my biggest supporter. He makes my abstinent muffins for me. He makes this for me. He makes that for me. Well, you know, you have your meeting tonight, so, you know, and he's just like, ah. He's not one to say, hey, you look good. That's not in him, but that's okay because I know he loves me. He loves who I have become. He didn't always love me. But, you know, it was through getting rid of that wreckage in my life that I was able to make that room for God. And so I, like I said today, I am happy and I am joyous and I am free. And I hope that, you know, you all just don't give up. Just keep plugging along because, you know, it's worth every single day. And I thank you all for letting me be here today.
Thank you all. That was wonderful. The last part, we have some time left, so we have time for sharing. We have a document here, since this is being recorded, that if you do share, you have to sign. So, and all it says is, I give C.A. Howe permission to record my voice in this workshop and understand it will be available for others to listen to on CDs and posted on the C.A. Howe website for the purposes of recovery from compulsive eating. So I'm going to give the microphone back over to Eric, and whoever wants to share, please come forward.
We were just sitting here and trying to, we finished up a lot faster than we thought. We each had about 20 minutes. I'd like to ask if there's anybody here that is having difficulty doing an inventory or has a question that that we can possibly help you with. I saw one hand went up that said she's having a problem doing an inventory. Anybody else? Care to discuss what your problem is? Or? Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Please come to the front of the room.
Hi, everybody. I'm Beth, compulsive overeater. This is the coolest room of all of them, you should know. Thank you so much, everybody. I have been in Howe for about 14 years. I was abstinent for the first seven, and thought I knew what 4 ounces looked like. And 61 pounds later, I went out for 6 years and came back 7.5 months ago. I just have a week again today. How? That's my sponsor. But I have to say that I really, truly believe today that I will die emotionally, mentally, and psychologically and spiritually if I take one bite. I think I'm finally willing to give it up. I think today. But I'm stuck with my inventory. And I think it's because I just don't want to do the work. I'm too lazy. I'm too this. I'm too that. But you know what? I don't want to go there emotionally again. And I think it holds me back from ultimately getting the ultimate recovery that I really need. Because I definitely can talk the talk. And I can walk the walk, skip the walk, walk the walk. And I have to do that inventory. And when I'm fearless and I do it because I just take direction, I truly am happy, joyous, and free. And so if you have any answers to how I can do that and move forward, that would be great. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jan, compulsive eater. What I'd like to say, because I was a big, big procrastinator, just terrified of facing my demons. And it's a matter of just when you sit down to do that question, I just say a prayer, you know, God, help me put the words on the paper. Help me not be afraid. Today I'm not afraid to face those, you know, which is such a blessing. But it does, once we're able to give that fear to God of facing that, you know, for me, that was a big stepping stone for me. So I don't know if that helps.
When I have questions, I try to go back to my literature. So here, I'll just read the thing that came to me from step four. It says, we wish to look squarely at the unhappiness that our compulsive eating has caused others and ourselves. By discovering what our emotional deformities are, we can move toward their correction. And that's my thinking about inventory. You know, I was miserable. I was just miserable. I was nuts and miserable and couldn't fit in clothes. And so I was willing to try to do this with the idea that that would be my only hope towards correcting. And I want to say I appreciate your honesty, because I love to listen to people that had long-term abstinence and then lost it. And I go, wow, it just goes back to that little thing where we think we could take that bite. And I try to go, thank God, today today my reality is that I don't want the one bite. I really want, like, the whole box and then the box after it. And so, wow, but thank you for your honesty. And, you know, toward correction.
There is no one answer to, you know, what you can do. I can tell you a couple of things that I've done. I learned it early on, and it's when I'm fearful or I don't know how to answer something, more so fear, and my life was fear-driven. Every aspect of my life was fear-driven. I was afraid you were going to find out who I really was because I was the consummate actor. I mean, I put on all the fronts, and nobody knew what was going on inside of me. They thought I was the happiest. I was the fat, jolly guy. I was the guy that was, you know, always the clown at the parties and the clown in school and everything else. And it was all a lie. It was all deceit because I didn't want you to see the pain that was inside of me. And the pain was all fear-driven. One of the things that I learned early on in the program was somebody that was in program told me that when you feel that way, pick up the big book, just open it. Don't look for a special, just open it and start reading. It's amazing what happens. All of a sudden you're reading something and you're saying, oh my God, that's exactly what I was thinking about. Now there's 500, 600 pages in the big book, and you just happen to open it up. Is it us, or is it God giving you the direction where to go? I mean, that's one of the things that I do, and I do it often. When I'm stressed or I don't know how to deal with something, that's what I do. I pick up the big book. Or I pick up anything else, but big book is mainly the thing because there's so much knowledge and there's so much wisdom in there. That's one of the things that I use. I said it before and I'll say it again. Don't fear and don't procrastinate doing the inventory. It may hurt. It may bring up pains that you don't want to face. I have sat and listened in sharing inventories. I don't get upset, and I don't get embarrassed, and I don't get offended by anything that anybody says. I've worked with gay people, lesbians, women who have been products of family incest, and all sorts of different things, people who have committed crimes and everything, and I don't react. I just listen to it, because there but for the grace of God go I. And I firmly believe that. We all have our own lives, and we all have our own dark sides and shadows and everything that we've done, and you know, I've come to understand and learn through working this program, and it's through working the program from step one to step two to step three, not going step one to step five, back to two, up to nine. It's a progression. You know, whoever modeled this, you know, it was Fred, it was Ray, they modeled this, and the model works. It's simple. Just follow it from one to the other. And as much fear as you have, face your fear. I say the Serenity Prayer numerous times in the day, and I have always wrapped myself around courage to change, because my major fear was that I was never going to do it good enough. I was never going to be able to do something without being ridiculed. I hated ridicule. I was ridiculed all my life. I was called Dumbo and Fatso and Eric the Derek. I mean, names that were just drove me crazy. I was afraid to go into a locker room that somebody was going to make fun of me. I still have body images. Here I am, a guy, 63 years old, and I still have body image problems. I've had it since I'm a kid, and it's something I'll never get over. But face your fears. Face your fears and do it with courage, and you'll find that it's not as bad as you thought it was.
My name's Cameron. I'm a compulsive eater. Hi. Well, Eric's question was, if you're having problems with the fourth step, what's going on? So I entered the program October 13th, 2009, after what I would now call a relapse, because I had figured out on my own sugar drove me crazy, and I hadn't eaten any sugar for 2.5 years. And then I lost my job and went away for the summer to school, and boy, that was crazy. So I plummeted down, and then eventually my best friend's mom referred me to the CEA HOW program. So it was like an immediate relief. So I made some mistakes in my 30 days. There's certainly no slips. Someone defined a slip this morning as a premeditated vicious attack on yourself, and I'm like, That is so true. That is so true. So I think, but since that time, I haven't completed my fourth step. I keep dragging my feet. And then, oh my gosh, I got a job, and that made me slip, so there's a lot of work to be done there. And then I had to do slip questions, and that was really difficult, so it took me like 90 days to do my 30 days, and I'm about 37 days or something like that right now. So I continue to be stuck in that fourth step, and I just find it really hard. I mean, the slip questions I could do, but the step questions, I think that all the things you guys have said have been really helpful, and I know that I'll start eating again unless I get through it, which is really scary to me, so I try to have no fear. But I also know that fundamentally what my problem is, I mean, I'm here in this program because food is the thing that actually drives me crazy, but I have lots of other issues, like with money, or I hear people say that they could be in many programs. I'm like, you know, it's terrible when your friends say, well, you should join a program for that, too. You do that compulsively, and you do that compulsively. I'm like, thank you. You know, just trying to work on one thing at a time here. So I know that fundamentally I'm making these choices to hurt myself over and over and over again, and I don't know what to do with that. I don't know how to get rid of it. I don't know what to do with that desire to hurt myself over and over again, and I'm afraid I'm always going to have that kind of around my neck. So that's, I think, what's going on with me and not doing my fourth step, even though my sponsor's on me, like white on rice, to do it, to do it, but I resist.
I mean, I just want to comment on that. I was in a workshop earlier today with somebody who I've listened to many times and respect very much in this program. And they talked about the different types of inventories. Some sponsors ask their sponsees to do the whole inventory at once and give it away all at once. Some sponsors say, let's do this question by question. Others say, let's take the block. Let's take early childhood, then adolescent, and later on. I think the most important thing in working the program and getting through the inventory is having a sponsor that you trust and that you have a relationship with. Because when you have that trust in your relationship, you can talk to that sponsor about anything. My sponsor is older than I am, is a woman, who I have no fears, no qualms about talking about anything in my life. She became my sponsor when I went to maintenance, and is a woman that is the most strong person that I've ever met in my life, the most spiritual, the model that I'd like to be in my own life of grace and spirituality. She is that person. So I have no fear about talking to her about things. Like I said before, I don't get embarrassed and I don't get offended. I'm very, very, very able to digest and look. I can't tell anybody what to do. I can't tell myself what to do. I'm a lost soul also. What I can share with you is what has worked for me in the past and what gets me through. So if you're getting hung up on the questions or getting hung up on the fear of the pain, look at that. Talk to your sponsor about it. Tell her, I don't want to talk about this. I just don't want to face it. Why don't you want to face it? You know, there's always a reason for it. There's always something underlying that we're not looking at. And one of the other things that I can tell you to do, which I did, is that as you're going through the inventory, and you come up with a resentment, aside from answering the inventory question, make a column on a piece of paper, resentments. Make a column on a piece of paper, people that you've offended or people that you owe an amends to, so that when you get further on in the program and you get out of the inventory, you're going to be able to go back to that and look at that and say, you know what, I know I owe Joey or Bobby or somebody, how am I going to make an amends to them? Because this is what happens. The fear diminishes. It quells, it goes down, it calms down a little bit. It's always there, but it calms down. It's not that huge dinosaur that's out there waiting to gobble you up. So, you know, take it a little bit at a time. Take it one step at a time. Take it one moment at a time. The fear is that you're looking, you say, God, there's 170, 100, what, how many questions there are, and how am I going to answer this? I can't get through the first 10 questions. It's the same philosophy of the program, one day at a time, 1 minute at a time. Don't get caught up in that, I have to do this in 2 days. You're not going to do it in 2 days. But also don't get caught up in the trap of saying, I can't do this and just, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it later. Put the pen to the paper. Whatever it is, whatever comes out of you, I can guarantee you, you're going to be amazed at what comes out of you. I write at times, when I sit down and I write, I have to slow myself down because the thoughts are so abundant in my head, and I'm writing, I can't even read what I wrote. It's just scribble. It just starts coming out. It starts pouring out. It opens up. The valves open up. So I have to calm myself down and write slower so I can remember what I wrote. Writing is an extremely cathartic tool, and the inventory is meant for that, is to pull that pain out. We are addicts. Addicts all have one thing in common. No matter the substance, we all have one thing in common. We have deep-seated emotional disturbances that we do not want to face. We're all trying to bury it with some sort of substance or some sort of action. We do not want to face it. Some people are drug addicts, some people are alcoholics, some people are combinations of all. So if you can do it one step at a time, one question at a time, and say, wow, I got through that. I didn't die from it. I didn't get it. I just didn't. I'll go on to the next question. And it becomes, every minute, it becomes easier and easier. And the pain is going to be there. I guarantee it's going to be there. Especially when you don't want to do it, you're hiding from the pain. You're fearful. So the only thing I can say is you got to face your fear. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was one of our presidents back in the 30s and 40s, had a very famous saying, the only thing you have to fear is fear itself. If you can have the courage to change, say the serenity prayer to yourself. When you get up and you say, I'm not going to do this. I'm walking away. My defiance comes in. And I turn around and I say, yes, I am going to do it. God, give me the courage to change. Give me the courage to change. Because as Einstein says, his theory of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result, that's insanity. So you have to have the courage to say, okay, I'm going to sit down and do one question today. Tomorrow, I'll worry about tomorrow when tomorrow comes. Today, I'm going to do this one question. And if you get through that question, and it's not killing you to do it, say, you know what, maybe I'll try to do another one. And you do what you can. But don't fall into the, I'm not preaching, I'm just telling you what I did, what I had to do for myself. Don't fall into the trap that I've always fallen into of procrastinating. Said, I can't do it perfectly, so I'm not going to do it at all. What do I accomplish by that? Nothing. The pain is still there. It's still there. It's not going to go away. It's like having a cancer. And I'm a cancer survivor. If you don't look at it, if you don't deal with it, it's going to consume you. I can guarantee you, it will consume you. It's no different. So try to be fearless. Try to do it 1 minute at a time, one step at a time, one question at a time.
Thank you. I'm Shelley, bulimic compulsive eater in recovery. And first I want to thank my higher power that I call God, and I want to thank all of you. You're truly a blessing for me, and I learn from each and every one of you, and thank you. Thank you for all your experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, I could qualify and tell you all that stuff, but the one thing that I want to say, I really related to a lot of the things you said. I'll qualify. I have 6 years, 6 months, and 21 days of recommitted abstinence and 2 meals, and I'm very grateful for that. And I've worked very hard for this recovery, and an accident brought me to my knees, too, because I had a lot of character defects and a lot of insanity that I wasn't willing to look at. I came in to Howe March 27th, 1989, and I haven't had to throw up since that day, but that didn't mean the insanity left. And one of the big things for me is that a big part of my disease is perfectionism. And I learned that I sit down with a piece of paper and I write without judgment. And that was a really big tool for me in doing my inventory. Just sit without judgment. Don't think. Because I was so afraid that I would read something or I would write something and it wouldn't be perfect enough, because not only do I have to look at it myself, but I have to share it with other people. You know, and another thing that I realized as I'm in recovery more, feelings do not kill me. I used to think that a feeling would kill me. And the news, the good news is your feelings come back, and the bad news is your feelings come back when you come into these rooms. But you must keep working on your in recovery, you know, and without judgment. Nobody's good. This is about you. You're not in competition. There's no hurry to do your inventory. Just do it. You're not in competition with anybody else. You're going at your own pace. And like Eric said, pick somebody that you can trust. I've done two inventories. I've done the How inventory, and I've done the inventory from the Big Book. And I'm very grateful that I did both. You know, I'm an advocate of both. But you got to start somewhere. I don't want to, you know, overwhelm anybody. But, you know, and my first inventory, my first sponsor, I was told to burn my inventory. And the second one, I did not, because I think I have learned that it's really important to look back, like Eric said, so that you can go and make your amends and learn more about yourself as you're in program. I don't throw my journals away. I keep them in a very safe place because it's really good to refer back to them and see how far you've grown. And that's, or see where you are, you know. It's really important for me to check in. So thank you for letting me share.
One other thought that I just wanted to say to you, there are no textbook answers to any of the questions in any of the literature. There is no textbook answer. The point of all of the literature and all of the questions that we do is to bring your feelings to the forefront and put it on paper and for you to see how you feel. Because in doing that, you get to see your character defects. You get to face yourself. You get to face your fears. Don't do it because you're trying to impress your sponsor or you think, is this the right answer? Is this what they're looking for? That's not the purpose of the exercise. The exercise is to release that emotional disturbance. What is down there? And when you do it, as Sherry just said, without judgment, you just put, as I said, pen to paper. Just start writing. Think about the question. As perplexing as it may be to you, just sit there and calm yourself. Say the serenity prayer. Say, God, how do I answer this? And just write the first word, and before you know it, you're going to be writing volumes. Whether it's two sentences or 20 pages, you're going to be writing. It's going to start coming out of you because it's all pent up inside of us, and we want to get it out. We just don't know how to do it. And once we get it out, it's like, oh, the relief. That's, you know. So don't do it with judgment. Don't look for the textbook answer. There is none. It's never meant to have a textbook answer, whether it's inventory or any of the literature questions. It's how the question appeals to you, what it means to you, and write on it. You can write on, you can't write, I tell my sponsees, if you can't answer the question, write on your feelings. Write on what you're feeling. Why can't you answer the question? What is going on? What's going on in your head? What's going on in your world? Just write. You can write it for yourself. You can give it to me, whatever you want. But write. That's what brings the problems to the forefront.
I know you have something, but I just wanted to mention something about the sponsorship and different ways that we're hearing about things. And it is funny. And, you know, all throughout our literature and readings, there's that concept of you find a sponsor that works for you. And so already you've heard that some sponsors ask you to write a whole bunch and share it to them. Well, for somebody like me, that would be too much because I would be freaking out that I would have so much wrong that by the time I got to give it to you, then I'd have to go back and do the whole thing again. So for me, it works way better to answer a question, read it, answer a question, read it. And so that was one. I have kids. The idea of keeping the stuff is like, oh my God, when I die, they're going to find this and they're going to really know their mother was insane. And so I get rid of stuff. So the bottom line is, you know, I'm thinking, wow, we do the steps. So you write an inventory somehow, whichever way is going to work for you, and you get a sponsor that it works for you with. Then you read it and how you do it. And then you have to go do all this stuff, like look at your character defects. I mean, it just keeps going. And you do it in the way that works for you. Probably the biggest theme I think you're hearing is it's just one of those, just do it, because there's a bunch of different ways, but, you know, just do it.
Helen, I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Helen.
I just wanted to say that as I was hearing everybody, I was thinking of what makes this program different from every other program, and that is that we are a spiritual program, and I always get reminded of that my higher power is a part of my program that sets it apart from all those other things out there that everybody, that we've all done, that are just the diet plans. And so if you're struggling and not having success at getting your writing done, ask your higher power to help you with the willingness. And it happens. It just happens. And another thing, I was given a gift. It's kind of a... those of you who have heard this before, a friend of mine that I knew from when she was in 10th grade passed away from this disease 3 weeks ago. And the thing that was the gift was that it was a shot in my arm, and I realized that could have been me in that bed. And she was so in pain and so isolated and so alone that she didn't want to have anything to do with anybody. Her friends were saying, "You got to go to the doctor." She said, "You can't make me do something I don't want to do." Anyway, she got to the critical point. She called one day her friend, and she was crying, and she said, "I can't breathe." My friend said her words were slurred, and she said she couldn't breathe. And my friend said, "I'm coming over with 911." And she said, "No." And she said, "I'm coming over in 2 hours. Get ready." So they had to break in to her house through a window because she was too weak to get up to open the door. So, you know, this is a serious disease that we have. And what we're given are these wonderful tools ordained, divinely inspired, to do every day, and you can do it if you ask your higher power. Thanks.
Is there anybody that would like to share, or anybody have a question, anything that we can bounce back and forth? I mean, I can put. Oh, please.
Hi, I'm Deborah, and I'm very grateful to be in recovery from compulsive eating. Hi, I actually had a couple of sponsees that, left the program when they got to just bolted at this part, just back-to-back kind of recently. And one of them... I'm the kind of sponsor that when you get through your 30 days, that, you know, that's how the program is written. Just that's the next step. You know, we start the inventory and sharing at meetings and sponsoring and get stepped up, you know, the whole nine. And I think one of them was just, you know, like a lot of us, and I'm talking about myself, I came to lose weight, and that was it. I didn't realize that my compulsive overeating was a symptom of a deeper problem, and I didn't realize that I couldn't get to what that deeper problem was without doing the work, you know. But, it's a really kind of daunting thing to do, and especially if that's not what you signed up for. So one person, you just straight up sabotaged their abstinence when it got down to it, you know. And one of them did slip questions till, you know, like for months, and I wouldn't give up on them. I wouldn't. I'll be here for you as long as you want to call, you know. And then finally, I got a text message saying I ain't doing it right. You know, so and what I do as a sponsor is just pray for them, you know. My prayer for them is for the highest and best good for their lives, and you know, and it takes what it takes, because I BS my way through my first inventory, and I'm about to do my fourth. You know, because I'm at a deeper level of recovery than I've been around a long time, and I used to joke that I think Jesus was my first sponsor. But anyways, I'd just like some comments from the panel on, you know, just how you guys have dealt with sponsees that, you know, it's just, it's a scary thing, I understand, but, you know, just what do you do?
It gets back to what I said before. We can only give what we have. You can't make anybody do anything. I know I was a picture of defiance. Thank God with this program I'm no longer a picture of defiance. You heard earlier on, I'm going to give you an example of something. I have recommitted abstinence of January 13th, 2007. October 9th, 2005, my daughter got married. At my daughter's wedding, I bought two very expensive bottles of champagne, one for her and her husband, and one for my table of my friend, my wife, and I. And I'm not really drinkers, but I bought it. And I knew that I was breaking my abstinence. I knew that alcohol is not allowed on this program. But I said, I don't have an alcohol drinking problem. It's only one drink. It's only one thing that I'm going to do, you know. And I didn't tell my sponsor, didn't say anything. I just did it. I just went out and did it, and I bought these two, you know, expensive bottles and brought them to the wedding, and I drank the champagne. That was October 9th, 2005. I recommitted on January 13th, 2007, 14 months later, because the month before, I was on, in the month of December, I took my wife on a cruise. As I said before, I think I said that I worked for Carnival Cruise Line. So I took my wife on a cruise to celebrate our anniversary. Our anniversary is in December. And as is on every cruise, they always have photographers walking around, and they took pictures. And they post the pictures up on a big board, and you go and you say if you like them, you buy them, and otherwise you leave them there. And I went, and I'm looking for the pictures, and I can't find the pictures of my wife and I, right? And finally, I see my wife, and I pick up the pictures. I said, who the hell is that with my wife? It was me. I had gained 37 pounds in 14 months, never admitted to myself. I didn't break my abstinence. I didn't do anything wrong. I was perfectly all right. Blah, 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 blah. Everybody knew, and I only wish that somebody had smacked me in the head and said to me, you look like you've gained weight, because I kept looking in the mirror and saying to myself, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me, you know. And when I saw that picture, and I said, who is that with my wife? And who was like, oh, my God, that's me. What has happened to me? Because when I get up in the morning and I look in the mirror, to me, whether I'm 50 pounds lighter or 50, I still look the same. I always look the same. To me, I always look fat, you know, and there's no difference to me. And my clothes got a little tighter. The cleaner, you know, shrunk my clothes, you know, the old excuses. Yeah, the old excuses. Defiance. Defiance is one of my main character faults, as it is of many people. But the deception of others is always rooted in deception of ourselves. So if you can go and be fearless and look at yourself in honesty, which is what the program asks for, that's the H of the how of the program is honesty, you have a good chance of fighting on it. As far as your sponsees and the ones that don't want to do it, the only thing that I can give my sponsees is love. I can give them my experience, my strength, my hope, and say, if you're looking to get what I've got, if you want what I have, you got to do what I did and so many others before who taught me what they did, because that's how I got it. It doesn't happen any other way. You can try to alter it. You can try to change it. It's not going to work. Just do what I do, and, you know, hopefully maybe you'll get there.
The old, you know, you can't give away what you don't have, so I try to think about sponsorship that way, that I have to be
working a good program. And I have to be in conscious contact with my higher power and doing what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, I'm an egomaniac, and so I struggle with things like judgmentalness and tolerance. And for me, being a sponsor, that's where I learn that. And so, you know, as I'm either not getting answers to questions or hearing question answers that maybe I'm thinking they didn't think, or they're not written, you know, if you're on the phone and you could tell if somebody really wrote it or if they're just like saying it. And so I try to take those moments to practice my patience, tolerance, and love, and lots of prayer and encouragement, and remembering that, you know, they'll get it when they get it. We get it when we get it. And so that maybe, it's not right then. Maybe they just need to do a little bit more suffering. And, we'll love them, and hopefully I'll be here when they come back.
I think that just loving them is the big thing. Just let them know you're there for them. I have one sponsee right now. He's been my sponsee for 3 years and 6 months, something like that. And he has yet to do his inventory. I've done them 4 times before, and I'm not doing them.
Okay.
So he's a food sponsor. And when I go home, I get to share with him that if you want to be an inventory sponsor, you have to do the see how inventory questions. So, and I'll be there for him. I have other sponsees who have sailed through it, who have just found such an amazing release and relief, and they're finding the freedom and joy that we have. That we can find in this program. So each one is different, but we just have to be there. So thank you.
The name of this workshop was Making Room for God, Joys in Step 4 and 5. Make room for your higher power. It doesn't have to be God. Just make room for your higher power and lean on that higher power. Do the program the way you're being taught to do the program. There is no simple, easier way. Ray read the letter from Fred S. about there's always people that are looking for the easier, softer way. Haven't found one person yet who's found the easier, softer way. Not in any recovery that I know of. So make room for your higher power. Take joy in it. This is not punishment. This is not work. This is just finding a life and living the life to the best of your ability. And I guarantee you that if you really follow this program and you really do it the way it's written, you're going to find the measurable joy. I'm going to make a suggestion also. There's another workshop coming up, and I heard it last year. If you're relapsing and having problems and you don't know how to work it or anything, Sheila J. is doing a workshop in the next hour called For Relapsers. Go and sit in on it. It's a very unique perspective, and she's got a lot of good things to say. Thank you all for being here and for letting us share with you.